So I do want to talk about strength, and some of you are like, well, what are we really talking about when we say strength? And I'm talking about it really as a quality, a psychic quality. It's not the same thing as being tough or brave necessarily, though there's a lot of overlap. But I want to talk about it specifically in an inner sense, as an inner quality. And actually the Diamond Heart tradition talks about strength as one of the essential qualities, you know, the sort of the real us is strong. There's a psychic strength when we're really the real us. And so I want to kind of talk about it in that context. And I want to talk about kindness as the basis of strength. So the story of Prince Siddhartha, who was his father when he was born, his father had talked to a soothsayer who said, well, your son is either going to be the ruler of the kingdom or a spiritual teacher. And God forbid his son should be a spiritual teacher. As the king thought he could protect the prince from all suffering. So supposedly he lived a life of just pure sensory pleasure and never left the palace. He was relegated to the palace. And but he finally did leave the palace one day when he was 29, and he saw a sick person, and he had never seen a sick person. Don't ask me how you, 2,500 years ago, prevent your son from seeing that. And then the next day, he went out and he saw an old person. Don't ask me how you prevent your son from seeing an old person. Never knew his grandparents, maybe. Third day, he went out and saw a dying person, a dead person, actually. These were all new to him. On the fourth day, he saw a spiritual seeker, a renunciate. And he resolved on that very day that the purpose of his life was awakening, enlightenment, a happiness that was reliable. And it took tremendous strength to just have that understanding and give up everything. He gave up all, you know, worldly comforts, and he just became a wandering beggar. And he hooked up with these cool dudes, what looked like cool dudes or whatever, you know, people who were doing all this mortification practice, all the self-denial practice, which he did for 6 years, to the point where he was pretty much a walking skeleton. And then someone found him. He was collapsed on a roadside and gave him a little bit of milk. And just, he wasn't eating hardly at all. He thought this was the way to enlightenment, to, you know, deny all your desires. And but when he tasted the, I think it was rice milk maybe, he realized the error of his ways and that was not the right way to achieve enlightenment, that there must be some kind of middle way between gratifying all your desires and completely denying them. And so he left that lifestyle and just began meditating and basically discovered mindfulness and very quickly reached full enlightenment. And this is a very famous quote from him. Relentlessly, I exerted myself. This is kind of near his enlightenment time. Gladly would I let the flesh and blood in my body dry up, leaving just the skin, tendons, and bones. But if I have not attained what can be reached through human firmness, human persistence, human striving, there will be no relaxing of my effort. From this heedfulness of mine was attained awakening. From this heedfulness of mine was attained the unexcelled freedom from bondage. So this is one version of strength. Even when you've got the entire worldly suite of pleasures lined up for you to be a ruler of a kingdom. It took a lot of strength for him to stay true to his inward voice of like, no. No, I've had every sensual pleasure possible, and somehow that ain't working for me. There's something else, and that lies in just seeing a wandering beggar, you know, probably a person wearing rags. It took a lot of strength. It took a ton of strength to do those practices of self-mortification and starving himself to death, basically. It took a lot of strength to realize this is the only thing he knew about spiritual practice, as learned from these wandering mendicants. But he realized that was not the right way. That took a lot of strength to realize. And then it took a lot of strength to devote himself to practice, you know, to the point where you're going to sit there and basically die to attain enlightenment. So this is kind of the context of strength. And it can sound even more surprising when you hear about it this way, that kindness might actually be the basis of that strength. I thought I'd throw in a little humor because it relates to that story. This is from David Bader, who says he practices Zen Judaism. He's a Jew boo, and a friend of mine likes to say, well, this is a Jewish friend of mine. This is from his psycho-Semitic side, all of his humor. So when you combine Judaism and Dharma, you get things like, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single oi. Be here now, be someplace later. Is that so complicated? Though only your skin, sinews, and bone remain, though your flesh and blood dry up and wither away, yet shall you meditate and not stir until you have attained full enlightenment. But first, a little nosh. To find the Buddha, look within. Deep inside, you are 10,000 flowers. Each flower blossoms 10,000 times. Each blossom has 10,000 petals. You might want to see a specialist. Be aware of your body. Be aware of your perceptions. Keep in mind that every physical sensation is not a symptom of a terminal illness. So we can be a little bit lighthearted about the Buddha's, you know, intense strength. We don't need to be that intense unless we really, you know, I mean, he was on the verge when he said that of full awakening, and he was just, nothing was going to stop him. Okay. But how would that strength possibly come from kindness? And I'm going to speak more broadly about our practice, because we've been practicing kindness in the mindfulness context, where we just really are kind to, bow to whatever's happening in our experience. So some of you have talked about that. When you're open to whatever's happening, kind to it, you're more resilient. We could also talk about it in the metta context, where if you're actually really practicing loving kindness and, you know, helping your heart be more inclined to kindness and love, that's a basis of strength. So I'm going to weave all of that in. But we can start with the understanding, and this is the basic insight of the Buddhist tradition, is external circumstances are very important. We're all involved all day long in external circumstances. So not to deny any of these. But the thing about external circumstances is they all come and go. You know, every one of them comes and goes. The internal circumstances are the ones that are much closer to home, the ones that are always with you. So you can leave an external circumstance that isn't working for you. The inner circumstances are much harder to leave because it's you. You're carrying it around all the time. And the basic understanding is our most reliable happiness comes from inward understanding, that when we have psychological insights and spiritual insights into how our experience works, you know, we're liberating the inner circumstances. And these are the ones that are always there. So this is why happiness based on success and external circumstance isn't as reliable as happiness based on something you're doing yourself, inwardly. It could be meditation, it could be yoga, it could be lots of other things. But the inward successes are closer to home and last. Now, we all need to have fulfilling jobs and families and relationships, so it's not to deny any of that, but it's to really understand, like, where can we make the biggest impact? And what's really interesting, I stumbled across this a couple of years ago from psychologist Sonia, I can't pronounce her name, Lyubomirsky, in The How of Happiness. This is controversial, but let's not get too hung up on the numbers. But according to her, 50% of what determines people's happiness is genetic. The other 50% is more circumstances. But of the, and so the genetic part is like, well, you know, there's just a kind of rough, we could say, template for your level of well-being. And that is what it is. But let's remember, does this account for the fact that people can become fully enlightened? It in no way denies that fact. It's just saying that a significant portion of our well-being is genetically determined. But at least half is not. And of the half that's not, again, I can't give you a lot of detail on how she came up with these numbers. 10% of your happiness is determined by your external circumstances. 40% is determined by your inner circumstances. Your attitudes, your views, your beliefs, your choices, and your behaviors. All of those are things that you have control over. So that's really good news. As in terms of what you can do something about, in terms of circumstances, 40%, well, actually 80%, because we take half the pie, 50%, a fifth of that is the external, and four-fifths is the internal. So in terms of what you can control, four-fifths of the pie is something you can do something about. So this is good news, and it actually correlates very much with the Buddhist understanding that your happiness depends so much on your attitude to what's happening, your relationship with what's happening. Yes, what's happening is important, but even more important, how are you relating to it? And kindness and mindfulness, you know, the Buddha identified as the two extremely helpful inner circumstances that lead to your happiness. And so mindfulness and kindness do a lot of good things for us. And one of them relates to what you said, Krista. They're simpler. Kindness, you know, you were talking about it kind of as like an energy, you know, conservation. And we could think even more broadly, our conceptual mind is the realm of the hypothetical, the confusing, the complex, the uncertain. And conceptual mind really scatters our energy. And we can replace that energy that goes into our scattered mind, when we take that energy towards kindness and mindfulness, with just being with how things are, we actually relax a lot because it's simple. You know how things are. When you're aware of this present moment, it isn't complicated. It isn't uncertain. So if you would, just feel your breath right now. Feel the rise and fall of the belly. Can you feel the relief? There's no doubt, right? There's just the simple movement of the belly. It's so simple. And so when we learn to let go like this, where we just let go of being lost in thought, we let go of the hypothetical, complicated, confusing, uncertain, anxiety-provoking world of thinking mind, and we just drop into simple presence. There's no doubt when you're mindful. When you're aware of a foot touching the floor, there's no doubt in that. You know what's happening. You're not confused. So mindfulness in this sense is kindness, because it's such a relief to be out of all that. Rilke says this about strength. From his poem, The Man Watching: what we choose to fight with is so tiny. What fights with us is so great. If only we could let ourselves be dominated, as things do by some immense storm, we would become strong too, and not need names. You hear that? He's talking about letting go of conceptual mind. What we choose to fight with is so tiny. What fights with us is so great. You know, you could say it's reality kind of begging you to make a choice to just let go and simplify and be aware of something as simple as your breath. If only we would let ourselves be dominated as things do by some immense storm. It's just like complete letting go. Letting go of trying to control. We would become strong too and not need names. That's conceptual mind. Conceptual mind needs names. Later in the poem, he says, whoever was beaten by this angel went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that kneaded him as if to change his shape. Winning doesn't tempt that man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings. Now, if we put that in the Dharma context, it's just be willing to just be defeated by the circumstances all coming and going. That's just the ultimate letting go. And just feel your breath. You know, it's the universe wanting you to just be bigger than all the little things you worry about. And so this is mindfulness and kindness, and it makes us strong. Because the more we're just here in this moment, the simpler things are, the more energy we have, the more strength we have. And some of you use the word like capability. The more capability you have, the more resilience you have. also just the kindness of arriving in the present moment as giving us real energy for being alive is the first way that, kindness is the basis of strength. The second way is that kindness gives us integrity. And if we think of integrity, it means oneness. And integrity means to be at one inside. You're not divided against yourself. You're not surprised by unconscious material bubbling up. And you're like, why did I say that or do that or act like that? You're whole because you've been kind to every piece of you. You're kind to your vulnerable parts. You're kind to your neurotic parts. You're kind to your strong parts, your beautiful parts. You're kind to all of it. And it's the kindness that soothes and tames everything. Remember, everything's arising in order to find a friend. And then there's no part left out. No part of you is a problem. All of you gets to express the glorious and, you know, the twisted. And it takes both mindfulness and metta, right? Because to be mindful of something, you have to first be kind to it. You can't really be with a part of yourself without first allowing it to be there. So to be aware of something, you have to be kind to it. But you can't be kind to something if you're not aware of it. So it just works like this. Kindness and awareness just go together. You know, our mindfulness becomes kindfulness. We meet and we witness. We allow and we witness. And we do that crux move of replacing judgment with curiosity. That's mindfulness and kindness combined. That's kindfulness. But part of kindfulness is that you're also bigger than all of the tough stuff, the vulnerable stuff, the neurotic parts of us. We're bigger than them. We're kind to them, but we don't get lost in them or let them run the show if that doesn't feel skillful. We can allow all our thoughts and emotions while not being driven by them. So that's where the wisdom aspect in mindfulness comes in. So mindfulness and kindness together, kindfulness, make us whole. And when we're whole, when we're not divided against ourselves, we're strong. There's nothing in us that's going to trick us, sabotage us, surprise us, because we've been kind to all of it. So, those are the first two things. There's a few more. So, but, you know, it's a little past halfway, so why don't I stop here and we can take a little break. And okay, so... So there's the kindness of being in the present moment, and there's the way kindness helps us be whole, and that both of those things really make us stronger. A third way kindness is the basis of strength, and I am saying causally, and what you all were saying was really helpful, you know, that kindness and things like capacity and resilience can kind of be together. And so all of that, yes, and there is a way that kindness really does lead to strength. And again, it's this kindness and mindfulness put together. And kindness, basically, mindfulness gives you your experience. It seems so obvious. No one knows what it's like to be in your mind, your heart, and your body. Only you know. And mindfulness is turbo knowing. It's really, really experiencing what it's like to be you in any given moment. And nobody else can know that. It's amazing. And that makes you the expert in you. You are the expert of you. And so kindfulness is you becoming stronger because you know how it is for you, and nobody can tell you what it's like to be you. And the more you understand that, the more it's like you're claiming yourself. You're validating your experience, you're claiming your experience, and nobody can tell you. And that strengthens you. And when you think of it this way, you can think of this inner quality of strength is really just the absence of shame, the absence of embarrassment to be you. It can be very embarrassing to be us. But through mindfulness and kindness, we learn to just love and accept. And remember that thing that Ram Dass said, you know, he, in all his practice, he hadn't lost a single one of these neuroses. But that's not a problem, because they don't have the power to define him, because he's bigger than them in any given moment. They arise out of habit, but in any given moment, they don't limit you or define you. And so another way to think about that is your real power is when, because of the absence of shame, the kindness inside, you don't really care that much what people think about you. That's when you're really powerful. And there's two ways to think of it. One of it is kindness directed inside, helps you not care what others think. But the other is kindness directed outside, helps you not care what other people think. And there's a story about the Dalai Lama where he was at a teacher conference of Western Buddhist teachers, and he was one of the guests. And someone asked him a question about, you know, being on the world stage and having so much attention, and he's always in the public eye, and what's that like, and how does he work with that? And, you know, the Dalai Lama basically said, well, the Chinese think I'm a wolf in a monk's robe. The Tibetans think I'm a living god. In either case, I don't care. My sincere motivation protects me. I just love that. He feels the goodness of his own heart because he cares and he knows he cares. So therefore, he doesn't care what other people think about him because he's caring about others. He's too busy caring about others to care about what others think about him. That's real power. And that comes from kindness going out. So kindness going in helps us be less embarrassed to be ourselves. Kindness going out helps us be less focused on ourselves. Either way, we're stronger. So kindness is the basis of strength. And then another way, which is very closely related to this, when you keep knowing your own experience and being your own authority, being the expert of you, then, you know, you kind of know who you are and you know what you want. You know what you care about. And that's this passionate engagement when you're passionate about things because you're not embarrassed to just love what you love. That's really strong. You're just passionate about something and the passion overrules what anyone's going to say about you. So all of this is how kindness makes you strong. We think of kindness as being weak, maybe, but really it's the opposite. Kindness is strength. And so, you know, we have the phrase tough love, but really we can, it's, I was thinking somehow love tough makes more sense. Our strength comes from love. I don't know, maybe that doesn't make sense. Okay, I want to say a little bit. So that's how kindness makes us strong. But what do I really mean by strength? Here's a poem from a Palestinian poet, Naomi Shihab Nye. I don't have the title. Okay. Oh, it's called Shoulders. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south, because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him. No car drive too near to his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile, handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling. So strength is that father, you know, carrying his precious cargo of his son. Strength is what protects us. And strength is not a denial of our vulnerability the way aggression is. Strength is actually aware of our vulnerability and protecting us when we need protection. And it's a lot of things. As this inner psychic quality some of you have named, it's resilience, it's capacity, it's ability. I mean, all of that comes from kindness. Another aspect of strength is that what the Buddha did, right? He persevered. He just had this resolve. So he persevered in the face of obstacles. That is definitely comes from kindness, because kindness gives you your passion, and passion makes you persevere. Strength is that quality of, you know, knowing your inner calling the way the Buddha knew. Didn't matter if he could have all the material, you know, blessings. His strength kept him true to himself. So it's this way of being true to yourself. And again, like some of you talked about, it's this openness, right? Strength is not some fixed, rigid holding on to something, right? That's just dogma. Strength is flexible, alive, open. You know, it's like that father protecting his son. And so then our strength expresses in lots of ways. And we can see in the story of the Buddha, it expresses, that inner strength expresses as going for what you want, going for what you're passionate about, and doing it no matter what, persevering, whatever the obstacles are, you don't care, because you are passionate. And all of that comes from your integrity and your wholeness and your lack of embarrassment to be who you are. That's your power. I remember, I mean, when I was young, I was so not strong in this way. And I was in college and I was doing environmental studies, but as I was also just loved music so much. And I studied piano a lot. I was never very good. Was never like some prodigy or anything like that. But, you know, I was in my last year of college and I just thought, wow, like, you know, who knows what life is going to be like. I have this passion. I want to go for it. But I realized what had kept inhibiting me was, the question wasn't, what do I want? The question was, am I any good? And that question, am I any good, totally got in the way. I didn't follow my passion. I wasn't, like, in touch with what I wanted. I was just worried about, like, how did I look to others? And it's like, well, finally I just had the courage to say, who cares? Doesn't matter if you're good or not good. What matters is, do you want it? And it was so clear. It's like, hell yes, I want that. And it just released my passion, you know? And that was a great little insight for me. But it really took kindness for me to just arrive there so I could just admit it to myself. I stopped, like, standing on the outside looking in, and I just got in touch with what I wanted. And that made me a lot stronger and braver. So I want to end just talking about my mom a little bit, because my mom is a model to me of kindness leading to strength. And my mom she died almost 2 years ago now. She was very passionate, very smart, capable person. She was really strong. But she was incredibly loving. And she was one of the first female politicians in the Oklahoma legislature. She was a state rep, and then she got became a state senator. And she was super strong. But the strength was never about ego. It was never about, wow, look at me, and this is probably, you know, the better part of the female conditioning where, you know, I believe she was conditioned to be relational and to be focused on, you know, what she could do to help. And she wasn't, like, sort of doing something which is more male conditioning, like, well, how much can I do? How successful can I be? She was just kept her eye on the prize, which for her was kids and education. And so that was kind of her specialty in Oklahoma. And, you know, Oklahoma, as you can imagine, I mean, it's the most conservative state in the country. She was a very liberal person. And she kept getting reelected in a Republican-dominated district because she would just walk the streets. She was incredibly personable. She just, you know, I campaigned with her, and a great story is I knocked on a door, and a woman came to the door. There was a Penny Williams sign in the yard, but there's a sort of get out the vote. So, hey, just want to make sure you want to vote. She's like, oh, I'm voting for, you know, I told her that was my mom, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'm voting for your mom. Don't worry, you know. She said, but my husband, he's voting for her opponent. But I make him put the sign in the backyard. So this is from her obituary. Penny Williams was unceasingly friendly, which Lisa wrote a lot of this. Penny Williams was unceasingly friendly at the Capitol, equally at ease with the governor, political adversaries, or the janitor. Everywhere she went, she collected people, said her longtime friend Norma Eagleton. Still, underneath Penny's able exterior lay a serious political strategist. When a bill was floated in the Oklahoma Senate in 1996 that strengthened penalties for wrestling sedated bears for sport, Penny, with a sense of irony, attached an amendment that increased punishment for domestic abusers. Her legislative creativity worked, and the bill was passed with the amendment intact. She basically, if they were going to raise the fine for bear wrestling, how could the fine for bear wrestling be more than the fine for domestic violence? So she basically embarrassed all the good old boys into passing that. Penny was known to be a relentless advocate for the causes she believed in. Asked how he got along so well with Penny, Oklahoma legislator Don McCorkle laughed. It's easy. You just do what she says. Penny truly was the idea person, said another fellow legislator, Robert Henry. She would come up with a big picture and we, her loyal lackeys, would suit up and help get it passed. A whirlwind of activity, Penny would disarm colleagues across the political spectrum with a unique mix of humor, social grace, wafting scarves, and glasses of iced tea. "I'll get it done," she'd tell onlookers. "Just don't watch me do it." My mom was quite ADD and all over the map, but very effective. When it came to standing up for the children of Oklahoma, she was unstoppable. She co-authored House Bill 1017, passed in 1990, a comprehensive education reform bill that included provisions to reduce class size and pave the way for increased teacher salaries, and made Oklahoma the first state to legislate statewide early education. Penny facilitated bipartisan cooperation between the Democratic legislature and the Republican governor, Henry Bellman, to pass the bill. In this day and age, it's a rarity. Mm-hmm. But Mom was so strong. I mean, she had so many battles. And it was, I mean, if you can imagine being one of the only women in a room full of good old boys in Oklahoma and advocating liberal causes. But she was undaunted, mostly because she just loved so well. She just loved kids, and she wanted to make kids' lives better. And so that's why she was willing, even as a very liberal person, to work across the aisle and get stuff done. So she's my role model of strength from kindness.